Hello and welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
And I'm, you had Ian McShane on for one episode. Yay, boo.
This is the second time we had to record it, so Jack is...
I was very energetic the first time. I had it. One take, and you just... in one channel, sorry. So I wasn't going to do it. I'm not the kind of actor. I'm
not going to work like this.
I can't work under these conditions. You might as well just kill me off.
What was
the point of having him on there?
I think it was really to kind of show the Hounds. So
you have to go get a great actor to have the Hound back. You could have just brought the Hound back anywhere. It'd been okay. Oh my God. It's Ian McShane. You don't just kill him off right away like that. Unless he just said, hey, I'm a fan of Game of Thrones. I want to do an episode. If that's the case, then I'm okay.
Well, didn't Ian McShane get in trouble for, spoiling stuff from this season? Maybe that's why they killed him off almost immediately. Well, or maybe that's why he didn't care about spoiling things.
He did admit that it was a small role. And that he goes, I just have a role that I'm responsible for kind of bringing this guy who people think is dead back to life. And, of course, that alone was enough for a lot of people to go, he's this character in the book, and he's doing this rumored character. And most people put two and two together.
I thought a lot of people thought it was Jon Snow, too, people that don't read the books.
Yeah, people who didn't read the books thought it was Jon Snow, and then people...
Because that's what I thought. Yeah. I didn't care. It's Ian McShane. I love Ian McShane.
We'll save maybe more details about the character. Do you think it's appropriate for Weapons of the Book stays in the book, or will it make sense for the recap to talk about that a little bit? Because it's a very significant storyline in this episode.
Right. I think I've got little tidbits for both. So we'll be fine.
Given that I can't remember the last time we had a cold open before the
last
exactly.
game. That's what I was about to say. Yeah, we had a cold open, and I don't remember one ever, because it threw me and a lot of other people off, too. Like, where are the credits?
No, they've done that before, I think.
Have they? I've been trying to remember.
I'm almost positive they've done that before, because I'm willing to bet Jay's life.
Well, screw that. Well, fudge that. Anyway.
Well, that's a little better than what you said before.
Man. Yes.
No, I want to say they've done it before. I think they've done it before.
I mean, again, it's 50-50, right? They either have or they haven't.
I could be wrong, but...
I'm sure some astute listeners will call in or
email
in.
How can you guys do a podcast? You don't even know they had a cold opening before or not. Consider me unsubscribed.
But before we dig into this episode, The Broken Man, let's give a chance to talk about some great promotions we have going on right now. One is with Loot Crate. If you go over to lootcrate.com/JayandJack, sign up today for a box of geeky goodness. For less than $20, you get $45 worth of t-shirts, toys, and more. And each month is a theme. Jack, what's the theme of this month's Loot Crate?
This month's theme is really special because you get a action figure of Ian McShane swinging from a rope. And who doesn't want that?
Eyes and mouth wide open.
Exactly. It's the coolest gift, and it's a surprise. It's a surprise for people, but you're going to open the box and go, wow, I've always wanted the Ian McShane hanging doll.
Perfect for Father's Day.
It can go with your Charlie.
Ouch. Yes. So sign up over there.
What's the theme?
That is the theme.
Ian McShane swinging from a rope.
You can check out more and find out more information over at lootcrate.com/JayandJack. Use the promo code JayandJack, get a special discount today. Also want to thank our listeners who contribute whatever they can over at patreon.com/JayandJack. People contribute from $1 to even more. And you can become a patron today over at JayandJack.com. Click the link, become a patron. All right, I'm obviously not 100% today, so I apologize to everybody listening at home.
I don't think anyone's noticed.
Yeah. Let's let Nick take it away on this recap for the seventh episode of this season.
Only three left, right?
Three left.
Yeah. Wow. God, that sucks. All right, go ahead.
Okay. Well, we have the cold opening, and we see a village camp-ish being built with Ian McShane building what looks like to be a church/temple. And we see a large man carrying a log all by himself when everyone else is taking six men to carry these logs up to build the church. And if anyone who really knew, I mean, it's the same silhouette. You knew it. It's like, oh, my God, I think that's the Hound. I think it's the Hound. And sure enough, as soon as he drops the log, it's the Hound. Big reveal. He's alive.
But did anybody – was that a shocker, though? I don't think anybody thought he was dead.
No.
I mean, I didn't think he was dead just because the way they left it. I mean, they've always shown that, like, dead is dead. You know.
Yeah, they didn't show him die. They left him there – almost dead, but I don't know. It wasn't a shock to me. I was just like, hey, it's the Hound. I'm happy to see him again.
Yeah, we like the Hound.
But I also felt, though, that this was the peak of the episode before the episode even started, because it was kind of like, oh, look, he's Hack. And then the rest of the episode just kind of was like, okay, there's some stuff. That's cool. But nothing really happened, I felt, action wise. It was just kind of another build on the previous episode to lead to the next episode.
It was a lot of build, but while maybe not a lot of action happened to a certain extent, like the stuff that they were setting up, like I loved a lot of the Sansa Jon Snow roadshow of trying to enlist people. But so to me, it was nice to see that. But it was definitely another build up setup episode, for what we assume the last three episodes are going to be.
Right. But, okay, well, after the credits, we see the Hound chopping wood, and Ian McShane's character is impressed watching him by his strength and inquires, how many men did it take to actually take you down? And, of course, all of us are already thinking what the Hound kind of says, because he's like, well, just one. And he's like, wow, one? Must have been a monster. And then he's like, it was a woman. And
it was a big woman, though.
A very big woman.
Brienne of Tarth, you don't mess around.
You don't mess with Brienne, yeah. But I kind of wondered at that moment, did Ian McShane believe him that it actually was a woman, or did he think he was just kidding around with him, or maybe did he think it was like a romantic interest of like it was a woman, or so many possibilities because he didn't really ask for any clarification on that.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
So he's wearing like a type of like seven.
Yeah, he's wearing the seven-pointed star necklace. Yeah. So he's clearly a man of faith now. And it's slightly different. I mean, I'll get into this a little bit more also in the book. But, yeah, he's supposed to be kind of a monk. Like, you know, an ex-warrior, which he actually does say, you know, he was an ex-soldier and he is a monk. Now he's just given up all that life and he's trying to find peace with himself. He's, started over.
Mm-hmm. Finding that inner peace.
Right, inner peace, yeah. And then they move on to a few hours later to where they're eating supper. And Ian McShane talks about how he found the Hound. You know, he thought he was dead. And even though it was nice, to me, it kind of felt a little bit forced of like, oh, I know you've been with me for a few months, but I just want to tell you again how I found you. a little too convenient for the audience. Like, oh, yeah. But I get it.
Are you saying lazy writing?
It was a little bit of lazy writing, I felt, because I could see it like if Ian McShane would have lived a few more episodes, maybe towards the end, like the Hound is learning to be a good person of the faith or something like that, and then Ian McShane goes, do you remember when I found you? You know, you were broken and all this, and then the Lord did this to you, the Lord of Light or the Seven did this for you. I could see that, but this was just too much of a convenience of like, oh, we're just making conversation. I found you, and you were almost dead. And it's like, well, duh.
If this leads to, because again, it seems like is whatever time the Hound has had. And does Ian McShane's character have a name? Like officially on the show, does he have a name? He might have a name in the book, but
it was Ray. Yeah, it was Brother Ray on the show, which is why they didn't say it. I think because it's like of all these Sansas and Tyrions, all of a sudden you got a Ray in there. It just kind of.
You mean a name we can actually pronounce?
But so maybe it's just kind of showing that the Hound is on a different path now. Will he follow maybe the same path that Ray followed with a former warrior that kind of has now found faith? And will that somehow lead him down a path somewhere else?
When someone asks if you're a god, Ray, you say yes.
Ray. but anyway, baseball, Ray. All right, we're just going to keep going here.
okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Yeah, well, he just inquires, like, so what kept you alive? Because you were, I thought so many times you were going to be, going to die on me. And he said, hate. He says, no, because that's not the reason. There has to be a reason, and the gods aren't done with you yet. He said, there's something greater than us out there, and whatever it is, there's plans for Sanser Clegane. And the Hound kind of looks up at him in surprise, like, oh, you do know who I am? He's like, yeah. You know, like, it's not a big deal. Because, like I said, like, he's now a man of faith, so it's all about forgiveness, I think. Mm-hmm. He's like, I don't care who you were. I only care who you are right now. And then the Hound looks at him and goes, you know, you don't know the things I've done. He's like, well, I've heard stories. And he goes, and then the Hound kind of makes a good point, though. He's like, if the gods really are real, then why haven't they punished me yet for all the horrible things? And then, you know, he just says they have. And then that's the end of the scene, which is kind of good.
Like, have
kind
you
of a
seen
good...
your face? I think
right.
They've gotten even.
That's what I thought he was going to say.
Yeah. Have you seen the face? I mean, think about how he found him. He was near dead. I mean, yeah. He's definitely paid for the things he's done, for sure.
Yeah.
And it almost kind of felt the same, like a sparring scene, the same as with the High Sparrow versus Marjorie or someone else, or Tommen. It's just like, oh, it's one of those, don't look at life from this, you know, half empty kind of way. Look at it from half full.
Mm-hmm.
It's just and how you look at your experiences.
Yep. It's all a matter of perspective.
Right. The next thing, we move on to the Great Sept, where Queen Marjorie is reading the Book of the Mother when the High Sparrow enters. And she kind of spins around and once again is trying to impress the High Sparrow with her knowledge and things like that. And the Sparrow says, you know, there's a lot of people I know who can recite every word, but yet don't have a drop of the Mother's mercy in their blood. Because then there's some people who are brute savages who can't read, but yet they have more wisdom in them than the Father. And I kind of wondered about this too. Is like, is he implying the same thing at Marjorie? Does he think that everything she's doing is a charade, or not? I mean, or he could just be making a point.
I think he's just trying to make a point. Like, he seems to always just have that classic kind of, I don't know, like pious kind of talk, where it's just like, somebody that thinks they know everything doesn't really know as much as the person who doesn't seem like would know everything, because mm-hmm. they're truly the normal type of person. Like, you know, it's like, you kind of, it's like that somehow reverse.
I think he's still trying to figure out if she's legit or not.
Yeah, I don't know.
Did Thriller just happen?
Oh, yeah, sorry. It's just. It's
my mic. You complain about me eating candy.
But then Marjorie kind of tries to show that she understands, because she admits, you know, for years I've pretended to be righteous. I've pretended to love the poor, but I never loved them. In fact, they always disgust me. And I kind of like this line, actually, by the High Sparrow, saying, like, you know, they all disgust us because they show us exactly what we are without all of our refinements, you know, to clean ourselves, our fancy clothes, because those are our illusions. Without our illusions, then we'd see, you know, who we really are.
Yep.
And then he kind of sits down and asks her if he can ask her about a personal matter, and that King Tommen has mentioned that she hasn't been having sex with Tommen since they've been free. And I kind of was like, God, I was like, that's not really a conversation you have with your priest. But okay.
Well, because he's bringing up, like, almost Tommen's had a complaint, you know, just like, yeah.
Hey, yeah, she's been back a while now, and can you put a good word in for me, Doc?
I need my 3 seconds of joy.
But yeah, he does make a good point, though. Well, I mean, she does too. She says, you know, the desires that I once had are no longer there, because all she cared about was producing the heir and having the power. And it's one of those things, again, like, is she really believing that she doesn't have the desire for power anymore? She's actually believing in the faith, or is this a more of a conscientious decision to say, I don't want anything to do with the Lannisters anymore, because mm-hmm. they're the ones that put me here. They're the ones that have made me have to do this whole charade of believing in this, and I'll just get the power I want my own way. There's so many thoughts I felt in some of these scenes. It was like, it could go either way.
Yep.
But the High Sparrow, though, kind of says, you know, the king must have an heir if we are to continue our good work. So he is saying, I guess, you know, he's believing that their offspring will continue with the joint union of the faith and the kingdom.
Yep.
But then he kind of flips. Now he shows him her the other side. The other shoe drops, and he says, "You know, you've made good progress, but your grandmother, however, hopes she follows your lead." And Marjorie is really surprised at this, you know, because she's like, "My grandmother? What's her, she have to do with any of this?" And she said, "You know," he says, "she's an unrepentant sinner, you know, and you must teach her the new way, as the way she taught you her ways, because without this, I really fear for her safety." And I kind of get this because she is the way, as what he said, but it's one of those moments also where I felt, okay, is this a plant? You know, is he trying to see if Marjorie will run to her to tell her to leave?
Mm-hmm.
Or because if she does tell her and all of a sudden the Queen of Thorns leaves, what does that tell the High Sparrow?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, someone is working against me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a play on all sides. One of veiled threats, and it will really test Marjorie's, you know, which side is she on? But I thought she played it off well.
Yeah. But in the next scene, we see the Queen of Thorns addressing Jack's favorite character, Septa Onello, or One Ello. Or like it's just one of those, kind of like Oneaters. And she's like, "Does this thing ever move or talk?" I just thought it was great. And then Marjorie still got this fakeness about her, like, "Oh, she's my friend and my respected counselor." You know, but then I loved it. You know, the Queen of Thorns just puts her in her place again and goes, "You're not in your set. I can have my guards bash you until I tell them to stop if I want." It's like, ah. Like, I kind of want the cojones she has when I get really old. Just like tell people exactly what I want.
Well, this episode had an older lady with the cojones and a much younger lady that didn't take any crap from anybody. So it was two ends of the spectrum of powerful women. It was great.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll get into that. That was my favorite scene.
Yeah.
Let's see here. And then she's looking at Marjorie and she's like, you know, like, "What have they done to you?" She goes, "Well," she goes, "nothing." She goes, "I'm actually much happier." He goes, "But you marched against the faith. You know, they could have punished you, but they showed you mercy." And then the Queen of Thorns is like, "Well, what about your brother? You're just going to leave him to rot?" This is grinding where you do believe that possibly Marjorie has really drank the Kool-Aid. And she's saying, "You know, Loras must confess, and then the faith will release him, and he must renounce his name and his title," which is just crazy because he's the, at least in the TV version, he's the only male heir to Highgarden, which means that means their whole family line and their rule would end over the Reach. And so the Queen of Thorns is like, you know, "That's crazy. You can't do that." She says, "You must go home." She goes, "No, I'm the queen. It's my duty to stay and be with my husband." She goes, "But you can go home." And then Queen of Thorns is like, "No," but then Marjorie very cleverly grabs her hand and has a note, a very small one, just shoves it in her hand. So then she knows something's up. And then when she stands up, she opens it to see that it's just a drawing of the Rose of Highgarden. So it's a cue to her grandmother that it's all fake, mm-hmm. that she's still on the side of Highgarden. Yep. So you see the Queen of Thorns nicely smile. So she knows that her granddaughter's still with her.
Yeah. Or, was she just trying to save her grandmother's life and get her out of there?
That's a good thought as well.
I still think that Marjorie is on her side, but after I was thinking about it, I go, "Oh, wait a minute. Is she just trying to save her grandmother?" Mm-hmm. But I don't think
that's a walk of shame I really don't want to see. So. I'm glad that she's going.
I don't think she'd do the walk.
True. And then in the next scene we move on to the wall, which is actually, it's just south of the wall in the gift area, in the north, and we have Torment, Giantsbane, and Jon Snow trying to convince the other wildlings to follow Jon down to Winterfell to overthrow the Boltons. And the wildlings make a good point that, you know, this isn't our fight, you know, why should we risk our necks for you, because there's not many of us left. And then John counters with, the North already knows that you're here. If Ramsay Bolton defeats me and kills me, the rest of the Northern families are just going to annihilate you at the same, hey, right after me. So we need to unite in order to preserve what remains of the Wildling clan. And then Giantsbane says, you know, he died for us, and if we're not willing to do the same for him, then we're all cowards, which that pretty much gets their dander up enough to where, okay, fine, you know, we'll fight. And then Num Num, the giant, stands up and just says the word snow, which took me a minute to actually understand what he said, but I was like, okay. And then so the rest of the leaders shake hands with Jon Snow, and so the Wildlings are now united with Jon.
Yeah, the well, it's interesting to see like the different people that he goes to, and what, you know, what, where has he built good relationships, and where maybe some his dummy brother kind of screwed him up. But this one definitely had a good case for the Wildlings to join.
Yeah, that was something I did feel was actually really interesting. I don't know if enough people noticed it, but exactly what you're saying, Jay, is that there's three different occasions in this episode where you see how John speaks, and some people listen and some people completely ignore him, either because he is a bastard or because he just can't find the right words to say to convince people. So here in the Wildlings, it works. And then later Davos has to save the day. And then there's one that just fails altogether. So it is interesting to see that. How they get themselves out of some holes and dig themselves more into one.
Well, I think you said he has respect of the Wildlings, but he doesn't have respect. Like, is it, they don't respect him because he's not a Stark. Well, he's not, doesn't have the Stark right. name.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the next thing we see, though, is Cersei pays a visit to the Queen of Thorns, and she's writing a letter, but we don't discover what the letter is to or where it's going. And Cersei kind of is really out of her element here, and she's trying to just reach for scraps, I felt, because she's trying to keep this Lannister-Tyrell alliance alive to defeat the High Sparrow. But because she inquires, you know, at first kind of in pleasantries about, you know, how is Loras doing, and then the Queen of Thorns just isn't having it. She's like, you know, the only reason why he's in there is because you put him there. And the only reason why we have all of this is because you put the High Sparrow in power.
Yep.
And, you know, Cersei's still trying to play nice. She's like, well, I've made mistakes and I have to live with those, you know, but we need each other. And the Queen of Thorns, once again, just deflects it. She's like, you know, and it's a really great line because, you know, I think all of us love to tell off somebody this way at some point in our lives. You know, it's like, you know, it's like, I wonder if you're the worst person I've ever met. And it's like, holy cow. There's no recovering from that.
Maybe.
But she says, do you remember how you smirked at me as my grandchildren were being hauled off to jail? I will never forget that. She goes, I'm leaving the city while I still can, and you should too. And Cersei just says, no, I'll never abandon my children in my city. And she goes, so what will you do? She goes, you have no allies, not anymore. She goes, your whole family has deserted you, and your brother's not here, and the common people despise you. She goes, just, you know, kind of admit it to yourself, Cersei. You've lost.
Yeah.
It's the only joy I have is that in all this misery is that you've lost. This is another good burn. any thoughts?
No, I think you hit the point on the head. It's just she's obviously Cersei. Like she's like somebody struggling to get out of quicksand, really. It's a point you brought up last week about both her and Jaime and their approach of they're just gonna kind of like go scorched earth their way out of to get out of anything, and it may work for a little while, but just there's a certain point where you just can't. You can't just muscle your way through everything and expect everything to be okay. And it's starting to close in around them a little bit.
They don't have the muscle anymore. They don't have the dad.
Right. Because you know, he was
a smart one. He was the muscle. He was the one people feared. They don't fear them.
Right. And I'm wondering in the next couple episodes leading up to her trial by combat, if we're going to see
Cersei kind of unravel more, because now that Jaime is gone and her uncle Kevin doesn't want anything to do with her, she's literally is alone aside from Tommen. Will she do something really desperate or just something really, really stupid that she knows she shouldn't do just because she's grasping for straws?
I'm guessing it's going to be something stupid.
Yeah.
I think that the whole reason they're bringing the Hound into this is he's going to be whoever the Sept calls in to fight
right.
the Mountain. Because yeah. why else would he be with the Sept?
Yeah, I think you're right on that. That was my first thought, too.
That's the popular theory, and I kind of agree with it, too, because you have the Mountain fighting for Cersei. And then you have the Hound, who, like I said, like George R. R. Martin does not kill off characters until their motivation is gone. And that is one of the Hound's motivations, is that he's always been under his brother. His brother's one that burned his face. You know, he's under his brother's shadow. So it makes perfect sense that he be the guy who represents the faith in this trial by combat. How he gets there, that's a good question.
Yeah.
But I could totally see that, the Hound versus the Mountain, which is now commonly known as some people as the Clegane Bowl. So
it'd be the awesomeness thing ever.
Yeah. Okay. And in the next scene, this we go to the Riverlands, where Jaime and Bronn are riding into the Siege of Riverrun, which is under siege by the Freys. Bronn comments on the sad state of the Freys' defenses, and Jaime kind of looks over and he's like, well, you can train him. And Bronn wants nothing to do. He's like, oh, no, no. He's like, you know, you've promised me a lordship, a castle, and a highborn beauty. You know, I still haven't got any of them yet.
It doesn't pay anything.
Yeah, I'm a knight now. I have to work for free. And it's cute. You know, it's good to see Bronn back, too.
It is good. It is
we
good.
Love Bronn.
Now that him and Cersei can't share a scene together, he can be back in the fray.
Yeah, I read that too. I didn't know that. It's one of those.
Wait, what are you talking about?
So that actor the actress that plays Cersei, they were an item. Like I said, they had a really nasty breakup, and will not be in any scenes or be anywhere near him.
Really?
Yeah. So apparently they'd been fighting they dated before the show even started. So many years ago. And apparently in the first few seasons, whenever they'd be on the same lot, they were constantly fighting, and so now they can no longer be anywhere near
really?
Each other.
Wow.
A little bit of inside baseball there, but yes.
He's so nice on Ripper Street, so I don't know.
Some people just maybe are toxic when they're next to each other. So.
I guess so. Mm. I did not know that.
Where was I?
Sorry.
Okay, so...
I just heard you guys talk. I was like, what are we talking about?
Well, it's one of those things on Facebook you see where it's like, you know, 10 facts or 12 facts about Game of Thrones you don't know. And it was just one of those top ones. And then you're like, oh, that's cool.
I never clicked on it because I thought I knew it all. So I guess.
Oh, well, I could see that with you. Yeah. All your crackpot theories on Lost were always right.
They were. 100%.
60% of the time, they worked every time.
But
I'd take that for Lost. What are you kidding?
So as Bronn's saying, you know, he didn't want to do it, Jaime kind of reassures him, don't worry, you'll get everything you want. A Lannister always. And then Bronn's like, I don't want to hear it. Don't even say that line. Because I guess technically, well, I guess he did. I don't know. I was trying to think, I think Tyrion did pay for everything he promised Bronn. So I don't know why he'd be a little bitter about it.
I think he's probably sick of hearing the motto.
Lannister always pays his debts.
Always. But as they walk through the camp, totally unopposed and unchecked, and you can see like the Frey men kind of look at him like, who are you, you know? And we see the two Lord Freys threatening to hang Edmir Tully in front of the castle walls of Riverrun. And the Blackfish walks out and is not really that impressed and just basically calls their bluff and says, go ahead, hang him. And they kind of just look stupefied, and okay, and they don't do anything about it, and they just bring him down. That's anticlimactic scene, but it's great.
Well, yeah, it shows they're not too good at this.
They're not. Yeah, they're.
Their incompetence of. Yeah, because, like, I mean, what really is true is, like, what advantage would the Blackfish have if he said, okay, I surrender, and then for all he knows, the Freys would have killed every one of them if he did surrender, because you've already got the red wedding. Yeah, you've got the red wedding. You can't trust them, and he knows that. So Jamie walks up and confronts the Freys, and he basically tells them that under King's orders, he is now taking over the siege. He smacks him around a little bit.
With his gold hand.
His gold, yeah, God, you know that thing hurt. and they finally consent. He orders new trenches and siege towers to be built because he wants the Blackfish from now on to look out and see that there's an army presence there to feel the fear. And then he requests that there a parley be set up between him and the Blackfish to negotiate.
I did like when he came up there, they said something, we're in charge. He goes, you just let 8,000 troops come in here without you knowing it.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, Bronn has to kind of delve down on that statement by saying, yeah, if we weren't your enemies, we'd be having sex with you right now.
We'd be blanking you up your butt.
Yeah.
But it was almost like the medieval equivalent of, it's under my jurisdiction now. I'm in with the FBI. Well, now I'm with the CIA, so it's under my jurisdiction now.
You want it? Take it.
But
and then moving on to the next scene, which I think was the best scene of the episode. Jon Snow, Sansa, and Ser Davos visiting Bear Island, which we have never been to before, and it's never been to in the books either. Well, actually, technically it has. You just don't hear a lot of detail about it. And Jon and Sansa are trying to make pleasantries with young Lady Mormont, who is probably a girl of 10, you think? And she wants none of it. And that's one of the things that's just great about it, you know, because Sansa's like, oh, you're going to be pretty. She's like, I don't want to be pretty, you know? And so,
my mom wasn't pretty.
Yeah. She was a fierce warrior. And then you have John coming back over. He's like, I knew your uncle. She's like, okay, that's enough. I don't need to know. Like, what do you want? It was great. I mean, because, God, just like, that's the kind of leader you want.
Yeah. Can I cut the bowl? Let's get to the...
What I like about this scene is what I like about Game of Thrones is, as we've seen on this all six seasons, is they hire children actors who can act. Where a lot of shows don't do that. They put children on there that, you know, maybe go cheaper or something like that. This kid, I don't know her name. I don't know her background. She was believable. It wasn't some kid just being a brat. I believe she was the leader.
Yeah.
And her lines were crisp and clear. I go, they do a great job of getting child actors who can act. And I think that also helps the show being a success. As it is. Yeah. That's all I got.
There's a Mormont spinoff coming. Okay, so she wants to know what they want, and John insists he asks for a pledge of support for the Starks because we have to retake the North, and she very cleverly looks to her maester and says, you're a Snow, you're not a Stark, and Sansa, you're a Bolton, or is it a Lannister? I don't quite remember. And it was such a burn, but it totally takes away all the power that they had coming in there of, like, we're the Starks, we're supposed to be your lords of the North, and it just basically said, no, my little island, I have more power on my little island than you do both combined, and it's in a way, and I was just like, wow, just you got schooled by a 10-year-old. And then, but she said there are no more Starks, and John though insists those. But Ramsay Bolton, regardless, cannot be allowed to rule the North. And then, but I felt he kind of started to make his case a little better when he says they hold my brother Rickon Stark as a prisoner. So that kind of did at least point out to her that there is
he's still a living Stark.
Yeah, he's still a Stark. We need to save him. It's a rescue mission now.
We got one left, man.
Yeah. And then she does sympathize a little bit. She goes, but why should I sacrifice any more of my men for someone else's war? And then they seem to be a little bit dumbfounded by it. And then bringing in Sir Davos, and he interrupts and basically saves the day, you know, and he sympathizes with the young lady Mormont because he's been in her situation. You know, he tells her about his history and how responsibilities have been thrust upon him, and he never thought he'd be there. And she's like, listening.
I thought she was going to say, you've been a 10-year-old girl? I don't think so.
But Davos makes a really good case, though. You know, he comes up and says, you know, this isn't your war, but it's everyone's war. You know, because this is not just a fight between a few little petty houses. This is a fight against the living and the dead. And surely they've heard rumors at this point, but she does look back to Jon Snow to ask if it's true. And he says, yes, this is true. The dead are coming. But as long as the Boltons hold the North is divided, and we need a united North because we don't stand a chance against the Night's King. So Davos won the day, you know, because she's convinced at that point. And so she's like, okay, we're not going to support the Starks. We'll stick to our duties. And so they're all relieved, I thought this was just hilarious because it's like, you know, they're all relieved, thinking we're going to get like a huge army from them. And she's like, how many troops can you support? You know, and they counsel back and forth, and she goes, 62. You're like, what?
All of this
for 62 men. Yeah.
But they're really rough and tumblers, all right? They're.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's because she comes back with, like, once they say 62, like a question mark, she's like, but our men are worth 10 of your men. Yeah, like, yeah, sure.
But again, I think Davos played well. I was like, well, if they're as half as tough as you, I think we're going to be okay.
Right. But that's what's sad. Is like, this is probably the only time we'll ever see this little girl again on this show. And it's like, and I know, I mean, me included, I would love to see another scene with her because she was so good.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. But it's almost like the George Costanza thing, like, just go out on top. Just like, yep, right, I'm done. I'm out.
I'm out of here.
The next scene, we return back to River Run, and it's a short scene, sort of. Jaime rides out to meet the Blackfish on the drawbridge in front of River Run. And Jaime does try to reason with him by saying, you know, the war is over, you know, surrender or hundreds will die. And, you know, the Blackfish is a little bit defiant, saying, you know, like, you know, hundreds of my men will die, but thousands of yours will die. And he's like, don't, you know, like, don't think of it that way. Because if you just surrender, all of your men will be spared on my honor. To which it's the same things with the Freys. It's like, you can't trust the Freys. You can't trust the Kingslayer either.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, a bargain with an oathbreaker. He's like, no, I can't do that. It's silly. And he goes, and the war is not over. I was born here and I'll die here. So either attack us or starve us out. Because we can last here 2 years. Can you sit here 2 years? And it's just great because basically he's telling Jaime he's going to have to make a decision, a very tough decision.
He also said he wasn't impressed what he saw either.
True. That's true, too.
Well, he's like, well, yeah, it's like, well, why did you agree to do this parlay? He's like, well, I just wanted to see it.
Yeah, I want to size you up.
And he's not, going back to Cersei, he's not afraid of Jaime. He has no fear of him.
Right. I mean, this is, like I said in previous episodes, podcast, this event really happens early on, or at least midway through book four, because it's right after the Red Wedding. It's in book four. So it's a little bit, in the book situation, it is more of a the war is still on.
Right.
And Jaime is still this legendary character of a warrior, even though he doesn't have his hand. But that's what I mean. Like, you know, Jaime is not the warrior he was. So there is no reason for anyone to be afraid of him because he's just fighting with his left.
Well, that he's also changed. He's also changed. Because remember in the first couple of seasons, we hated him. Now we like him. He's more, you know, mellow or civilized. I'm looking for something to say, but he's just not the same guy he was the first two seasons.
Okay, and so in the next scene, we go back to John, and now they're at Deepwood Mott, which is just south of Bear Island, but across the water. And now they're visiting House Glover, and they outright refuse to support John in the war against the Boltons because the Boltons have helped them reclaim their own castle from the Ironborn. And, you know, they don't want to bite the hand that fed them in a way because, I mean, they're rightfully scared of Ramsay because Ramsay, he said, like, I could be skinned alive just for talking to you. And then he does kind of look at him and says, what other houses have pledged to you? Because he's kind of considering it, though, because he is loyal to the Starks. And then, of course, John's got nothing. He's like, I've got House Mormon. And he's like, and?
A bunch of wild people.
Yeah. I've got 62 people. And so then he goes, you know, and then he goes, and what else? And John goes, I've got wildlings. And then Sir Glover then laughs at him. You know, he's like, no. He goes, so the rumors are true. He goes, and our house will not fight alongside wildlings. And it makes sense because the North has always fought against them. It's the same thing. It's an uphill battle. Like, we're not going to fight against these people who have constantly killed us for hundreds and hundreds of years. But then I think, you know, Sansa really, really shows her inexperience with negotiating or at least trying to parlay with people because she really oversteps, I felt, by trying to remind this guy of his vows, which could work in some instances if you're being a coward or something. But no, like, this guy's outright saying, like, you know, you're not making a good case. And then she reminds the vows, and he just turns around and is like, you know, just gives it right back to Sansa, saying, we supported the King of the North in his war, but where was King Rob when the Ironborn invaded and killed my wife and my family and all of my men? And just says, House Stark is dead, and then walks off. And it's just silence, like, drop the mic, I'm done with you.
Well, you could see Davos and John were looking like, oh, Sansa, what are you doing? What are you doing? You're screwing up here.
Yeah.
But she definitely made a huge mistake. They're like, no, just be quiet. But
it's a good point. You know, Robb Stark, he kind of lost, he fell in love with a woman and kind of lost his actual focus and ability to finish the war they needed to finish.
Yep, and it cost him his life.
Yep. And then, and one of the more puzzling scenes coming up, because I just felt it defied geography, you have the Ironborn in Volantis, which is half the world away from where they were the previous, two episodes ago?
They have fast boats.
Fast boats? He says they have the fastest boats.
Those things are greased lightning.
Man, the wind. You don't know.
Yeah. But you see Yara enjoying herself, and I felt that all the guys that were in there were Ironborn because they all were wearing kind of similar leather. But yeah, they're in Volantis at a brothel, and Theon is not really enjoying himself, and I wonder if it's because he still feels like Reek, or is it because now he's basically a eunuch? It's kind of like, what's the point in me being here?
A bit of both, maybe.
Yeah. But Yara does try to comfort him, saying, don't worry, you're never going back. You know, we'll get revenge for you. But if you're a broken man and you don't feel that you can aid me, then just go ahead and cut your wrists. But, you know, she does, like, grab his hand. She goes, but I need you. And so she basically steals Euron's idea. And it just gives them justification of where they're going and says, we're going to sail to Meereen and we're going to make a pact with the Dragon Queen and we're going to take back the Iron Islands, just you and me. And are you with me? And then Theon shakily looks at her and then just like, yes, I'm with you. And that's the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good scene because I think, you know, he's if you think about any mental traumatic experience, it's going to take time for him to come back. And I think, you know, we've been talking about earlier, like, Sansa maybe was a little tone deaf in terms of, like, what was the right thing to say at the right time. And I think for Theon, he needed a bit of this tough love to kind of say, you know, are you with me? I mean, like, you know, I need Theon. I don't need Reek. I need Theon. So I think it was a good thing.
And he's slowly coming back. I mean, it just, you know, he's in a situation there. He doesn't want to be there, obviously. And yeah, but I you can see he's slowly coming back to where he was. He may never be 100%, but he's
right. And to me, like the title of the episode, The Broken Man, applies more to Theon in this episode more than it does the Hound. Because the Hound, to me, was not really broken. He still seemed kind of the same guy. Whereas in Theon is broken, and he's got it's kind of, this episode had a lot to do with some characters' redemption in a way, and non-redemption.
Also, I thought it could have been about Jamie also.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
I mean, he's in the cover of the scene when they show the episode Broken Man, but yeah, it was probably Theon. Well, she mentions broken.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that was a hint.
And then now back in the north, this is an episode that defies the laws of geography, because if you look at a map of the north and you see within one episode, you see Sansa, Jon, and Davos and go from the Wall to Bear Island to Deepwood Motte back to Stannis' camp, which is just above Winterfell. I mean, it's like saying you went from New York to Seattle to Houston, Texas in one day. You know, it's just crazy. But it's just one of the things that I kind of nitpicked a little bit about over. But it works for a TV show. Okay. You see Stannis pointing out that they're in Davos pointing out that they're in Stannis' old camp, and that it was a perfect defensive position because you had these high mountains, things like that. And then Jon wisely says, well, I don't want to stay long because winter could be coming. Snow might trap us in here, which might be a hint because this actually might happen. Davos does say, yeah, like for Stannis probably lost as many men from the snow as he did at Winterfell. And this also I thought was interesting because they're at Stannis' old camp, and I'm assuming this is probably the same camp where Shireen was burned alive. I'm kind of wondering, like, one, where was Melisandre in this, and what happens if they find a little funeral pyre, you know, somewhere, and they're like, you know, who's this? Yeah, that was just one of those kind of questions in the back of my mind going, okay.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Davos runs off to break up a soldier's fight, and Sansa begins to question Jon. And it's one of those also moments where, is this an overstepping of authority or non-respect of each other or what? Because Sansa saying we need more men. And I think Jon just doesn't want to because he's seeing how much they're failing in getting men. So he says, no, we're just going to go to war with what we have. And then you see Sansa then writing a letter. And I guess you guys probably assumed, like I did, who else could she write a letter to other than Littlefinger to finally say, I need the troops from the Vale.
Yep.
And where is this going to get her, or what's she going to have to give up in order to get the support of the Vale?
She's gonna have to marry somebody.
That's kind of what I thought too.
Like, marry Littlefinger.
Yep. That's what I was wondering. Is she gonna marry Littlefinger in order to get the North back?
I know you're a big Peter Baelish fan, so this would be a very well played move by him in this. Because
that's a good move though for Peter Baelish.
Well, I'm not a big Peter Baelish fan. I mean, I think he's a sleazeball, but I just like his. I like how he maneuvers in the books and in the show because he is a clever guy. He always ends up on top most of the time. You know, he turns even his negatives into positives. And a lot of people can do that. Usually people give up after somebody puts them in a corner.
And he's going to get probably what he wants anyway.
Right. So I just have respect to how clever he is. The same as I do Tyrion or Tywin. It's just people like those kind of characters, even if they are horrible.
Horrible in a good way.
Yeah. Okay. Then in, I guess, the final scene, we have back to the Hound, and Ian McShane is giving a sermon, and it's a really good sermon. It's kind of questioning why people do the things that they do and what makes us horrible. And he's like, you know, why did I fight? Why did I fight as a soldier? I fought because I didn't want people to think I was afraid. But I was afraid. I was afraid all the time. I was a coward who followed orders. You know, you want me to burn down that building? I'll be your arsonist. If you want me to steal that from a farmer, I'll be your thief. You want me to kill those people? I'll be your murderer. Basically saying, you know, war justifies us being horrible people, but it's never good to be a horrible person. And so just, it's never too late to stop and start again and start helping people. And you actually kind of see that this speech is kind of getting through to the Hound, because he's shaking his head in approval and deep thoughts. And then the Brothers Without Banners ride into their camp, at least three of them do, and they inquire to what they're doing there. And he said, nothing, we're just sitting there chatting. But what are you doing here? And he says, we're protecting the people. And then Emmett Shane, you know, kind of covers, like, oh, who are you protecting us from? Which I thought was just a nice, smart, like, comment.
Yeah.
And then they inquire about horses and gold, and says, no, we don't have any of those things, but you're welcome to stay for supper. Like I said, I don't think we had an F-bomb in this episode, because that would have been a good place to put one. But
yeah, that would
have
been.
The guys from the Brothers Without Banners just say stay safe, because the night is dark and full of terrorists, which shows that they are followers of the Lord of Light, which harkens back to season two, where Arya and the Hound had been, where, you know, he got put on the trial and he killed that guy, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then it goes back a few hours later, and the Hound is back to chopping wood. Ian McShane says, what should I have done? You know, I kill them? You know, most of these guys don't know how to fight. And he says, besides, killing is a disease, and you don't spread a disease like that. And then Ian McShane leaves for dinner, and the Hound continues to chop wood. Oh, I say that is in the final scene. Sorry. And that's the end of that scene.
Yeah, because then we have the
I have Arya.
Yeah, the Arya scene.
I just forgot to put a space in my notes. Okay.
I've done that.
But so, I mean, any thoughts about that? It's in the book section. But I didn't actually like that scene for more book reasons than anything else. I didn't like the Brothers Without Banners kind of doing a reversal of what they were like in season two. Mm-hmm. It just seemed more like they were common thieves more than they were these people in season two. But I'll get to that later.
Okay.
So the next scene we got is with Arya, and she's strolling the streets of Braavos, and she comes across a couple of sailors from Westeros and says, I would like to book a passage back home. And they say you can't afford it, so she throws him a small bag of gold. And I like her facial acting in this little bit scene here. I thought was really great, because he's like, where'd you steal this from? She's like, you know, what do you care? And he's like, yeah, good point. You know, it's just like, because if you watch that scene again, anybody out there, like, look at her face when she does this. It's just so clever. And then he says, I'll give you a hammock in the back in steerage, and she throws him another bag of gold. She says, no, I want a cabin, and we leave tomorrow. And I just loved it. It was just so cocky, and I'm going to have it my way. She walks off, and she's looking out at the canals, and an old woman appears, and I immediately knew who it was. It was just so blatant. Yeah. And she's like, hey, sweetie, or hey, cutie, or something like that, and then she immediately pulls out a blade and slashes Arya across the stomach, grabs her from behind, and stabs her twice in the stomach again. And Arya does happen to break free and throws herself off the wall into the canals. Oh, and by the way, this is the waif that did it. I didn't say that. She does escape, and she's walking through, pulls herself up to land, and she walks through a crowd of people with blood pouring out of her stomach and her face just full of fear, and no one tries to help her.
Yeah.
Nobody.
And nobody. And you wonder if it's because they know that she's a marked woman or what? Have they seen this before?
It was interesting. That's for sure.
Now, some people, yeah. I've seen the theory that says it wasn't her.
Right. That's what I was about to get into.
Okay.
Yeah.
We do have a call about that as well.
Okay, then I'll wait.
Okay. I mean, it does. That's actually what I thought too, because if you notice that, when she's in the very first time you see her, the way she's walking is very dignified.
Right.
She has her hands behind her back. She's not swaying like the way she normally does. She has a different kind of set of clothes on. It's a little bit more nice. Yeah. And
she's cocky.
She's cocky. Yeah, she's cocky. She doesn't have a needle with her. And where does she get the gold? Because she does.
Yeah, I agree. Where did she get the gold?
Yeah.
Where she get the, because she did have money from being a beggar, but that was just small change.
Right.
So it was like, where do you get two small bags of gold? So that makes sense. And it makes me wonder if it's possibly Jack and Hagar. Because I didn't notice this. A guy on our message boards actually pointed this out to me. And in the previous episode, when the waif is talking about wanting to kill Arya for not doing what she was ordered to do, she says, just as I suspected, instead of saying, just as a girl suspected. And then Jack and Hagar says, you know, a girl had so many gifts. And it makes me think, is Jack and Hagar trying to teach the waif a lesson? Or is he genuinely looking out for Arya? Because maybe he believes in her more than he does the waif. And just
the reason
them has to go.
The reason I believe it was him is because the way they were looking at her, Arya, they weren't helping her. They were just looking at. I don't believe they thought it was a young girl. They thought it was someone else. That's why that was. I go, that's not her. That was my first thought. That it wasn't her. Anyway, I could be wrong.
And Maisie Williams has actually said during the previews, I think she tweeted it out like months back, that a lot of the things that people were claiming were Arya in the previews weren't Arya. Like maybe you think you're looking at Arya, or are you looking at Arya? Yeah. And that's just a teaser, but it's one of those things like,
Yeah, I don't think it's her.
Okay.
And she could be dead next week, and I'm wrong. But I don't see how you survive a stomach wound. You just don't.
Yeah. No, in those days, you don't. Yeah. No, you're dead. No, I'll be furious if Arya dies. It'd be almost one of those where I don't want to watch the show again.
quit.
Yeah,
I'm not watching.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's my favorite, so.
Well, she's gone for sure now.
And you killed her.
I know.
Way to go, Nick.
And then now for the final scene of the show. We return to the Hound Chop. I'm sure this time. 92% sure. We return to the Hound chopping wood, and he hears a scream in the distance. And as he approaches, he finds all of his new family of villagers murdered, all of them shot with arrows in the back or front. And
how
see
far was how far was he away?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he couldn't hear the commotion going on. They took the time to hang a guy and, I mean, shooting the arrows, I guess, would make a lot of noise. But you hear people scream. Here's one scream. Oh, I better go see what's going on. Leave my machete behind, Bedell.
He's a different man. He's more chill these days.
I guess.
But, yeah. We see Ian McShane hanging, being hung from his not-quite-yet-finished temple or church. And then you see the Hound angrily reach for an axe and then fade to black. And so it makes you wonder, is he going to return to the old Hound? Or will he follow still what Ian McShane was trying to preach?
Old Hound.
Maybe it's a bit of both. Maybe it's like a balance of both. Like he kills people, but it's for pious reasons.
Yeah. May God be with you.
Maybe, possibly. I don't know.
He's going to the dark side again.
Yeah. I guess we will see. All right. Well, we do have some listener feedback here. So what do you say we get into that, gentlemen?
Do it.
Let's go.
All right.
What do we got? How many?
We have, I think, three calls. So
Three calls.
Really? Do you guys hear me at least, hopefully?
Yeah, very lowly.
Very lowly. Perfect. That's just what I need. But you should be able to hear the calls just fine. So here we go. Let's play my message here. This first one is about, was that really Arya? So,
okay.
So Will, I think I mentioned Will Sigmund a week ago. He was on, yeah, I mentioned last week's episode. But here we go.
Hey guys, this is Will Sigmund calling from Wake Forest, North Carolina, and wanted to share an interesting theory that I had based on the last couple of episodes of Game of Thrones. So last week we had a couple of scenes with Arya, and this week we had a scene with Arya, and kind of more surrounding the Waif and Jaqen. And the theory, I'll start with this week, and I noticed it after I read this comment on Reddit, but I thought it made a good point. And it talks about how in the scene that Arya was in this past week, she had no needle, tons of silver, which may or may not be something that could be true, different clothes, different hair, and different mannerisms. So this commenter comes to the conclusion that it actually wasn't Arya in the scene, but rather, in my opinion, Jaqen playing the role of Arya with her face. And it kind of goes hand in hand with the theory from earlier this week that I read about, commenting on last week's episode about a conversation that the Waif and Jaqen had in the Hall of the Faces. And it's basically Jaqen's talking to her, and he says, and the Waif says, as I expected. And the emphasis here is on the fact that she uses the word I instead of a girl. And so therefore, Jaqen's reaction is, shame, a girl had many gifts. Now, the assumption in the scene that we saw last week when we watched this scene is that Jaqen is talking about Arya. But in reality, with this post and kind of partnered with what I was talking about from this week, it sounds like it actually he might be referring to the Waif for the fact that she made a mistake and used a first-person pronoun. And also, so these two things go hand in hand, and the fact that she stabbed Arya, it wasn't actually Arya, but rather Jaqen, and he is trying to teach the Waif a lesson about, you know, getting out of hand and becoming too consumed with herself. So that's just a theory I wanted to throw out there, see what you guys thought, and, you know, anyway, let me know what you think. Thanks.
Thank you, Will.
That was spooky. That was like verbatim everything I just said.
Well, I
you're
agree.
Stealing theories, Nick.
I agree, just not because he's from Wake Forest. But, no, I agree, and plus the way she went off the bridge, that was kind of a cool move.
Yeah, but yeah, the Waif
not that
Arya definitely
couldn't do that, but I just thought it was a pretty cool move.
Yeah, well, the Waif is definitely more consumed than somebody that isn't supposed to be, you know, taking sides is.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I agree 100%. It's Jaqen. And plus the way they were when she was walking down and she's bleeding and people are just looking, it's like, why wouldn't anybody help? They knew something, so.
Yep.
Don't worry, Nick. Your favorite character will be back next week. I might just be laying there in a puddle of blood, but she'll be back next week.
But now if he's using the Arya mask, but wouldn't that mean Arya's dead and he has her like face cut off or something?
No, but if you remember in last season when the Jaqen Hagar died,
oh, that's right.
At least she Arya thought she was pulling off the faces, and there was another face of Arya there.
Right.
So I guess maybe he just has more talents in that realm. Yeah.
He's got lots of faces.
Some kind of magic. Yeah.
But anyways, thanks Will for calling that in. It definitely is a. Maybe it's just fans of Arya hoping and praying that maybe it's
I like her, but I'm not a huge fan, but I think she's alive.
Well, we know she's alive right now, but
she's not
dead woman walking.
I mean, I like her. I like her character, but it's like she died. I wouldn't stop watching the show, because if I did that, I would have stopped watching a long time ago. They kill everybody off.
Thanks
for calling, Will.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. How that plays out.
I'm saying, sorry, I stepped on your theory.
It happens.
All right, let's. At least you didn't, Nick. You didn't try to say this is my crackpot theory and it's completely original.
Yeah, and then the next person, oh, it's the same one. Wow.
Now, to be fair to me, I always went back and said,
Are you kidding me? I had to go back and get another crack pipe theory.
All right, let's go to our next call here from Cynthia.
Jay and Jack, hello, this is Cynthia Schaefer. I have to say that I was ecstatic when I found out you all were doing a Game of Thrones podcast. I was a loyal listener to your Lost podcast for years and recently started listening to this podcast, and I'm so happy to have found it. Anyway, I have to say that I am one of the strong supporters of the R plus L equals J theory, and I think that that will definitely come into fruition or into light before the end of season 6. The reason I am calling, though, is because I have a crackpot theory of my own, and it has to do with the Starks and their direwolves. So I think that every character or Stark whose direwolf has died will unfortunately face the same fate and not make it to the end of Game of Thrones. I also think that a character will not die as long as his or her direwolf is living. I think that the death of a direwolf is foreshadowing for or to the death of its owner. We all know that the Starks have some strong affinity for and connection with their wolf. I think it runs much deeper than that, and I think it has some kind. I think that they have some kind of sacred bond that they share. So I think that Rickon will be the next Stark to die since Shaggy Dog just was killed. I think Sansa will be next after Rickon because Lady is gone as well. Actually, I'm not sure how Sansa has made it so long since Lady was killed so long ago. In my opinion, Rickon will die soon. In fact, I think within the next couple of episodes, but I'm not sure how long Sansa will have to live. Could be the next season, who knows. Bran's fate, I am also unsure of, though. To go along with my theory, he will have to die since his wolf Summer is gone. Maybe the way this would work is that by Bran becoming the Three-Eyed Raven, he has in a sense died. Maybe Bran Stark no longer lives or exists or can exist once he completely transforms into or becomes the Three-Eyed Raven. So remember, in the beginning, there were 6 direwolves. Rob had Grey Wind, who was shot by an arrow during the Red Wedding by the Freys. Sansa had Lady, who was executed in place of Nymeria by Ned, their father, after Nymeria bit Joffrey. Bran had Summer, who was just killed by the Whites here recently. And Rickon had Shaggy Dog, who was just killed by the Umber Order, and then they brought his head as proof to Ramsay. Arya has Nymeria, although we aren't sure of her whereabouts, and Jon has Ghost, of course. So I think my crackpot theory is that Jon and Arya will live, in, as we know, that Ghost and Nymeria are still out there, and that it's possible that if their wolves die, then they could also be killed and face the same fate, although I think that they will both make it to the end. So that's my crackpot theory, Jay and Jack. Thanks, and I'm so happy to have found your podcast again. Take care. Bye.
Thank you, Cynthia. So what do you think about that? Is there some truth in there, or truth in that?
I like it.
I wasn't addressed in the phone call, so I don't have to answer.
We have a bitter Nick here in the...
You killed off my favorite character and they don't get mentioned in the phone call. I'm not talking.
Actually, I think it's a pretty good theory. I think especially for the books, because both Rickon and Bran's direwolves are still alive. And you can see, obviously, with Jon Snow, there is some attachment there with Ghost. And then Nymeria is a good symbolism for Arya, too, because Nymeria is free and wild, the same as Arya is free and wild. But like I said, like she does kind of make a point, though, with Sansa, because Lady died in book one, and she's still alive. And a lot of people wished Sansa was dead. So it's one of those where...
That's harsh.
We'll see. I like it, though. It's clever thinking.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say because podcast.
Could Rickon already be dead, though? I mean, he's with Ramsay. I think he could already be dead.
I think they would show his death.
I don't know.
Why? He's just Rickon. I mean,
poor Rickon.
But no, really, he's probably in a, if he's not dead, he's probably being not treated very well.
Is Rickon like the Pete Best of the Stark family?
The Starks.
Because he's Rickon. I mean, really. I mean, when he came back, I forgot all about him. Come on.
He's not even Ringo. He's Pete Best. Almost there. Almost. Now,
He's Jan Brady of the bunch, okay? He's.
There's always there's one in every family.
Yeah, there's always the, you know, he's the Jan Brady.
All right, well, Cynthia,
he tries the different hairstyles, and they still go, "Who are you again?"
Glad you found our podcast. But Nick is definitely the heart and soul of this one, so we got to give him credit.
Yeah, he is.
So, thank you. Without him, I'm just kidding.
Without him, we wouldn't do it.
But let's go to our last call here from Marcy.
Hey guys, this is Marcy. I'm calling from Iowa, and just wanted to say I am late to the party. I was huge fans of the Lost podcast with Jay and Jack, and I didn't realize there was life after Lost, so I haven't been listening all these years, but now I realize that you guys are doing a wonderful podcast covering Game of Thrones, which I've been a huge fan of as well. Book reader, watched the show since its beginning and really enjoy it. So I wanted to give you guys a call, talk about the latest episode, The Broken Man. First off, I just have to say, favorite line of the night had to be when Bronn cut off Jamie saying, you know, don't even say it, don't even say it, because everybody's tired of hearing a Lannister always pays his debt. But the question I have about tonight's episode was, you know, I was just starting to read and really buy into the possibility of this theory that Arya and the Waif are the same person. I had my questions and my doubts, but now that we've seen this vicious attack, what do you guys think? You know, the theory was, you know, widely being talked about, but now it really seems to have quieted down. Do you think there's still any possibility that that is the case? And finally, since I am, you know, just started listening to this Game of Thrones podcast, I may be wrong, but it doesn't sound like Jack has been throwing out any crackpot theories, and I have to say I really miss that. But well, I would like to share my own crackpot theory that I've had for some time since reading the books, and it's about the fact that when Dany and Arya and Tyrion all ended up in sort of at least the same continent, I was convinced it was because they would be the three riding the dragons, because Dany would be able to ride the largest dragon, and Arya and Tyrion, both being smaller, would be able to ride the smaller dragons, which have been kept in captivity. Anyway, that's just my crackpot theory, and I'm sticking to it. Thanks.
Thank you, Marcy, for the call. Glad you have found Life After Lost and Life After Lost podcast here on the Game of Thrones
podcast. With this podcast with Jay, Jack, and I'm forgetting the other guys. Oh, Nick, that's right.
But what do you think about that thought there? We've talked about Tyrion before riding one of the dragons, but what about Arya riding one of the dragons?
Yeah, well, I can get to the dragons too, but like, yeah, I had never even heard of that theory where Arya and the Waif were the same person.
Which, that's interesting.
It's very interesting. I'd like to know where she got that from. I could Google it myself, I guess. But
yeah, I've never heard that one either.
Because in the book, it's been a while since I've read book four, but the Waif is older than Arya, I think 4 or 5 years. I mean, of course, they can be disguised, but so it's just never occurred to me, because like you just naturally think, oh, she's older and she's a lot skinnier, but maybe it is a character, but I just don't see how it could work, really, because she is. They play games together in the book, and they do things, but I mean, unless she's just going crazy and playing with herself, I don't know.
I mean, it's a twist that's been done before, and it kind of makes sense, or I guess make it work in your mind on, okay, she just gotten stabbed. Would it only make sense if she really didn't get stabbed? It was all in her head, and that's why people are looking at her like, "Why are you holding your gut? You're fine."
Jay, wow.
So it's Fight Club.
Fight Club, yeah. Spoiler alert.
hey, I got in trouble for that once.
Sorry. I think it's a good theory, you know, because it could kind of work. It kind of justify what has happened in these scenes, because it's definitely, it doesn't seem 100% on the up and up.
Mm-hmm. And as far as me not giving crackpot theories, just some of the book readers were just kind of jerks.
Yes.
No, because, you know,
Jack will make a theory like, oh, that could never happen.
They just get upset.
Read the books.
Well,
maybe
now that the books are not current, maybe I could start doing that next season.
I think so. Or maybe close out this season, the last three episodes.
Okay, that's what I'll do. But that kind of, it was just like, you know, someone did, they just, it's just a crack pipe. It's just for fun, guys. Just lighten up. But the book readers, some of them, not you, not Nick.
Well, actually, since Nick's there, maybe you could just run it by Nick before. And
I keep forgetting Nick's here.
And if you get the sample from Nick, then you do the crackpot theory.
That's a good idea.
So, Marcy, great suggestion.
If I remember Nick is here, then next week I will ask that. I'm just kidding, Nick. I'm just kidding.
Next week's episode is going to be great. I'm just going to tell you. Just silence.
But so starting next week, Marcy, we will have Jack's Crackpot Theory of the Week return on the Game of Thrones.
This means I have to pay attention to the episode.
Yes.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I love Game of Thrones.
Yeah. As for her theory with the dragons, it makes total sense because you have Arya, Tyrion, and Dany, all three in Essos. I have never liked the idea of these main characters being Dany's other dragon riders because it's just too perfect for me. Yeah. I don't like happy endings because that's not the way life is. And Game of Thrones is not the happy ending type of series. I mean, because that's like Ramsay Bolton said, like, if you think this has a happy ending, you haven't been paying attention. And I love that because that's how it is. You know, you think Robb Stark's going to be king of the North. Guess what? He dies. You know, like, it's just not, you know, you want Ed Stark back? No, he dies. I mean, I just like that. The only interesting theory I've heard with who could possibly be the dragon riders, which is she's got close. You have the black dragon, which is what is Dany's dragon.
Yeah.
Targaryen colors are black and red.
Yeah.
You have the gold dragon, which could be Tyrion's dragon because gold and Lannisters.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the white dragon, which could be Jon Snow.
Ooh.
But that's just one of those that is kind of convenient, but I could see it.
Yeah. It would be interesting. Plus, see, I mean, need those dragons to kind of take out those White Walkers. Need that dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Dragon fire. But
yeah. Always like the idea of Bran warging into a dragon, too.
Oh,
there's lots of things that could happen.
That'd so you don't want cool. a happy ending at all? There's no thing here where you go, yeah, I could live with that ending. That would make me happy.
I don't know. We'll see. You know, I mean, I don't know. I just don't want it to be where everything works. I mean, George R. R. Martin has promised it's going to be a bittersweet ending. And that's kind of what I expect. Like, everything works out, but it's at a high cost. Or it's at the, you know, the character you think is going to win the day does win the day, but they do it at their own peril. You know, and so that's what I like.
But on a show like this, could it actually ever end? Because people are always going to be fighting over the throne.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Khaleesi gets the throne. Well, there's going to be someone that doesn't want her on the throne that's going to try and take over the throne. The game never ends.
Well, yeah. Just it's, like
you see it in life. You see it in life. It never. I mean, the violence. Like, say, hey, it'd be great if war would just end. It just never ends because someone's always got to try and take what's not there. And, you know, there's always somebody who wants something.
And thus the Game of Thrones, right?
So like, how do you end this show?
Well, the show ends with the kind of conclusion of these characters' journeys, right? It doesn't necessarily mean...
But it could also be... It could also continue...
Just like there's still the Island of Lost out there, and there's still...
Oh, I get this, but this show could possibly never end because you could always start up with another cast of characters. You could go 100 years later down the road, and this show, it's a moneymaker. There's no reason it couldn't... There's my crackpot theory.
But you say the same thing about Lost,
a year later,
right?
They can come up with another... Just more, just different characters, and 100 years later.
But yeah, look at Fear of the Walking Dead. Like, it doesn't always work. You could say like, well, you used two different characters in the same universe.
Dead, it
doesn't always
work.
It
was a stupid plot, and the characters. I mean, you gotta have.
It's easier said than done. That's for sure.
I get it's easier said than done, but I'm just saying it's something that you have to get the right characters, but this show's had no problem killing off characters, and it still survived. It's the story that works. Anyway, just throwing it out.
Did you think Han and Leia were going to get married and have beautiful kids and they'd become a powerful Jedi and everything would work out? No. I mean, you know, Han's own son kills him. Spoiler alert. It's not a happy ending. Well, just saying. No happy endings.
Well, life sucks. All right. Well, we're an hour and 20 into this episode. Let's get into everybody's favorite part of this podcast, which is what happens in the book stays in the book, where Nick breaks down things that happen in the book, maybe mythology in the book, and how it relates to what we saw on today's or this week's episode. So, Nick, without any further ado, take it away.
Woo-hoo. Okay. This one's fairly short, so shouldn't take too long. In River Run, it actually goes pretty close hand in hand with the book, with Jamie talking to the Blackfish, which I was actually kind of glad that it went almost alike. He didn't bring as many troops to the siege. He only brought 1,000 compared to the 8,000 he says in the show. But the one thing they did cut out due to it was when Bronn says, like, maybe you should just try to kill him. And then he says he's an old man. You know, like, but actually in the book, Jamie does actually challenge the Blackfish to a duel. And the Blackfish refuses outright because, one, yes, true, the Blackfish is an old man, but two, Jamie only has one hand. So it's like, you know, why? What do we have to gain with this really poor, pathetic duel that would happen?
Between a one-hand man and an old man.
And an old man, yeah. So that kind of, that's the one thing they cut out. But you never know, it could happen maybe next episode. Maybe they just saved it, but that's the one thing they did cut out in that scene. In the north, the plea to win over the northern houses was actually done by Sir Davos, but when Stannis was still alive. We kind of talked about that before. And so he does win over House Mormont. The Glovers actually do also rally to Stannis' army because it's Stannis and his army that liberates Deepwood Mott from the Ironmen, not the Boltons. And that's pretty much it for that, one little difference. The Hound in the book is not yet confirmed to be alive. It's just highly, highly believed to be that he's alive because there's been rumors of other soldiers wearing his armor around. So there's a guy, you know, riding around killing people in a Hound helmet, but that's not him. They don't believe that's him. What believes you to believe that he's alive is that when Brienne is looking for Sansa or Arya in her quest, she stops at this island, which is called Quiet Island, at the mouth of the Trident River, where is a monastery there. And she talks to the priest, who is the Ian McShane character. And while she's talking to him, she sees this huge man digging a grave in the background, who she thinks could be the Hound. And so a lot of people have just said, oh, that's got to be him, because they were in the Riverland when he almost died, and he probably just nursed him back to health. And as I said earlier, though, the one thing that really kind of made me a little bit upset was the whole Brothers Without Banners thing, because the Brothers Without Banners are actually a good group that is only there to seek justice against the Freys and the Lannisters for killing off so many people in the Riverlands. So to kill a bunch of group of commoners is totally out of character for them. I just thought it was pointless, and why would you kill a bunch of unarmed citizens? But for the show, I really think it's just trying to set up the return of Lady Stoneheart. This character, spoiler alert, but this is the book section, so everyone should know this already. Because if you notice, everyone is shot by arrows, which is with the guy in the yellow cloak. That's his specialty. He's a great archery person. But Ian McShane was hanged. And Lady Stoneheart, when she finds people, she gives them the choice of join us or die. And what she does is that she hangs them if they don't join her. So that's probably what happened with Ian McShane.
Ah,
but okay, we'll see.
Interesting.
Sorry, spoiler alert. But,
well, do we know if that actress is coming back, or are they keeping that super secret?
I don't know. I mean, the way it's setting up, like I said, like from the beginning of this season, what you're seeing all these storylines bringing back the Riverlands story arc that was in book four. And then they cut it out in the previous season. But what they're doing, it's like it makes sense to all of a sudden show Lady Stoneheart towards the end of this season, just out of the blue. Like, oh, my God, there she is finally. Because it's just where all these storylines are emerging towards.
Okay.
So I could totally see it. But then again, I could totally see them not putting it in. Maybe she doesn't want to be the actress who played played her, doesn't want to resume the role. I don't know.
Who knows?
And then the last little bit in Volantis, as I stated before, Yara and Theon they're actually in the north in the books right now, and they're taken prisoner by Stannis' army. The storyline that they're doing is actually Victarion. His storyline, who's a Euron's brother, but they've combined Euron and Victarion into one character. And Victarion, who's like an admiral of the Iron Fleet, he's the one who's sailing to Dany to win her over in marriage. So what they've decided to do is take that storyline and give it to Yara and Theon. And that's pretty much what they've done, just kind of switched characters in these stories. And they never stopped in Volantis. They just sail straight from the Iron Islands all the way to Meereen, although they have not arrived yet in Meereen yet. And that's it.
But the speed at which they're sailing, I mean, they'll probably be there in like 0.7 seconds, right?
They should already be there now.
Yeah. You know. They're on the way back.
They have fast ships. I'm talking about really fast.
Oh,
like,
man.
Warp speed fast.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I do hear what you're saying, because sometimes that bugs me to show. I know when I used to watch the Americans, they used to bug me. They would be all over the place in like the course, like 3 hours. I'm like, look, I've driven there. There's no way you can get all the around there with all the traffic and stuff. So sometimes I get nitpicky too. Yeah,
this is the one thing. It's not really a big concern yet, but this season I have noticed that, because whereas in the first 4 or 5 seasons have had the book feel to them. I mean, even though they're not always accurate, they've had more of a slow progression of timing and how to get from one point to another. Whereas in this one, it's just boom, boom, boom. And it does feel at times like lazy writing, or like that Lost season 4 and 5, I mean, 5 and 6 kind of feel, where it's like, let's just get to the end.
Right.
A lot of it's not developed the way it should be developed. And that's what's making me concerned, is I don't want to look back in years and go, I really loved seasons 1 through 5 and then of Game of Thrones, and then the last few were just rushed. I want it to actually be written well.
You want the slow burn. You don't want the...
Right. Well, it's when you write to... when people know a character in a certain way, and then all... And you've shown how their motivations make them do this, or they're going right there for some reason, and all of a sudden a character just appears because it's convenient for that character to be there. It's like, well, how the hell did they get from this spot to that spot? It just it cheapens the show and the storytelling.
I agree.
Well, there you go.
I agree.
I mean, I still love it. I still love it. I still think it's one of the best shows on television right now. So I don't really have a lot to complain about.
But you do see it on a lot. Like, Walking Dead's done that a lot the last few seasons, where they just scenes you like, go, well, how, come on now. Anyway.
Yeah.
Well,
don't go stupid, Game of Thrones.
Well, I don't think it's going stupid. I just think the pace is faster, and it's not following the book. So
stop being a brown nose. Stop being an apologist.
No. I'm trying to say, like, I've really enjoyed this season. So,
but again, I'm not a book fan. I'm enjoying it, so. But I hear what Nick's saying. It's just, you don't want the characters to just all of a sudden be, for convenience sake, oh, I'm here. Okay. Here's Johnny.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that's a good place to close out this episode. If anybody would like to give feedback on next week's episode, we usually record about the next day or so. So you can give us a call at 385-309-0311. Call anytime for any of our old Lost podcast listeners. The old 206-309 does not exist anymore. It's 385.
And we lost it.
309-0311. Also,
we lost it. They wouldn't give it back.
Also, you can email us at lostpodcast@gmail.com. If you want your own Ian McShane on a Noose action figure, you can do so with this month's Loot Crate package. Over at lootcrate.com/JNJack. People are going to be really disappointed if they go over there and it's not in there. But,
hey, I have one swinging for my studio right now.
It's
a fan spinning, so he's like blowing back and forth. It's so cool.
It's a box delivered to your doorstep filled with geeky goodness, like t-shirts and action figures and all that kind of fun stuff. $45 in value for less than $20 a month. And if you sign up now over at lootcrate.com/JNJack, use the promo code JNJack, you'll get a special discount on your first month's Loot Crate. Definitely check that out. Also, I want to send a special thanks to Brad from Chicago, Tack from Tokyo, and Eckhart Richter for contributing a significant amount in our Patreon page. If you'd like to become a patron today, you can do so by going to jnjack.com and click the Become a Patron link on the top of that page. And you can see a full list of all of our patrons on our thank you page. Thank you to our patrons. Without you, this show would not be possible, as well as many, many others. If you like what we're doing for this season, please give us a positive review over on iTunes. It is always welcome and always helps out the show. If there's something you don't like about the podcast, please send us an email to lostpodcast@gmail.com. Like, hey, Jack should be doing some crackpot theories. I think it's a great idea. And next week we'll be doing, Jack will be doing one. So pressure's on, Jack.
I'm ready. Bring it on, man.
All right, guys. Well, that is
it. And don't forget, Nick's here too.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Nick's the essential ingredient here.
He is. I mean, seriously, we wouldn't do it if he wasn't here.
He's what brings class and knowledge to this podcast.
Well, okay, all right. Maybe knowledge, but come on. Class, really?
Anyway. Class, yes. That's a judgment call.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.